The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this evening, I would like to talk a bit about the hindrances. The hindrances are very important topics for people who do mindfulness meditation. People who do mindfulness meditation are meant to become experts on them. Which is different than what people usually assume. The hindrances are these forces in the mind that usually make it difficult to be mindful, difficult to be present. Buddha said it also makes it difficult for you to be wise. People usually in the grip of these so-called hindrances usually make poor choices. And so the usual attitude towards these is that these are unfortunate or perhaps worse visitors, and you do whatever you can to get rid of them. The approach of mindfulness meditation is certainly we want to not be hindered by the hindrances, but the path in mindfulness is to pay attention to them and learn what they are, really study them, how they work for you. So these five hindrances, I'll say them, two of them are sets of two, so it's actually seven total. But so their first two is desire, sometimes called sensual desire, and aversion or ill will. And they're kind of paired, desire and aversion. One's wanting something, the other one's not wanting something. So when the mind is in the grip of desire, then it thinks about what it wants, it's consumed by what it wants. Maybe an extreme version of it would be someone who's an addict, addicted to something, and their mind is lost down the highway of addiction, their thoughts and desires. Or we're sitting in meditation and we're trying to be present, but we have a strong desire for something, desire for a good meal or for sex or for anything at all, even a good meditation session. And the mind is so caught up in thinking and fantasizing, imagining about the desire that it becomes a black hole for our awareness, meaning that the light goes into the black hole and doesn't come out. Our awareness goes into the black hole and we get lost in this world of desire. Same thing can happen with aversion. We have something that we really don't like, something we have a lot of antipathy for, we hate it, we're angry, we're resentful, and the mind gets involved in the stories, the conversations, the imagination, the fantasies about our resentments and why we're grumpy and things. And it's hard to kind of spend 5-10 minutes in meditation and you finally wake up from your thoughts and say, where was I? And you look back and you realize you were, you know, going on a rant with someone because you're angry. And so those two are paired. The next two are paired as well. And the simple way of saying it is tiredness and restlessness. So like a drop in energy and too much energy. But they have a little bit more fancy words for them. The first is called sloth and torpor. So how many times have you thought you had sloth? You tell your friends, I'm really slothful today. And I say, we don't use that word in our active vocabulary too often. But this is not ordinary tiredness. It's not the tiredness of you know being sleepy or something, but it's a tiredness that comes from the psychological approaches we have of living our lives, psychological reactions and responses we have to our life. And so you see it really dramatically in a small child who you ask them to do something they don't want to do, and they're so tired. But, there's 5 minutes later, they're playing, happily, lots of energy. And you can, where do they get all that energy, And you can't keep up. So there's kind of, conditional tiredness. Causes and conditions come together. And psychologically. And then sloth maybe is more physical, torpor is maybe more mental. And then the next one, restlessness, is paired. It's restlessness, and usually it's called regret or remorse. And this is the kind of ways in which we get heavy or get drained or get energy drops and we're uninspired. There's no, we can't just muster up our effort and energy to practice. Well, No, I mean we have energy. Salasana torpor is no energy. We have energy, but the energy is kind of going in all kinds of directions. You get pulled into being restless, into regrets, remorse. We feel bad about what we did. We're worried somebody's going to catch us and notice. We feel like kind of uneasy about something about ourselves. And so it's easy to get swept up into the world of restlessness, uneasiness, remorse, regret, so that there's very little presence of mind because we're swept into the thoughts, the stories of that. The last of the five hindrances is doubt. And doubt isn't paired with anything. It's just doubt. And they say that doubt is the most dangerous of the hindrances because it's the one that's most likely going to cause people to stop practicing meditation or stop practicing mindfulness. And so doubt is anything that you vacillate or you feel hesitant or uncertain about practicing, feel incapable of practicing. So for example, you know, I have doubts about whether I can do this. This is too difficult. Or I don't know if this is the right time to be meditating. I don't know if this is the right practice for me. Should I be doing loving kindness meditation? Should I do breath meditation? Should I do open awareness meditation? I don't know what I'm going to do, and I don't know what I'm suited for, and I don't know what I'm doing this for, and probably this Buddhist practice is not really good for most people, and I'm not sure it works, and so the mind gets swept up in doubt, uncertainty, vacillation, that it can't make a decision, it can't engage with what's doing because it's doubting everything we want to do. So these hindrances operate in all activities, not just meditation. One interesting way to look upon them is that they are strategies the mind can have for what we do when there's a challenge. And so each of you probably get challenged. Things happen that you'd rather they didn't happen. They're making things difficult for you. Something uncomfortable happens in your environment. And then there can be a kind of gut reaction of one of these hindrances can arise, and different people have different strategies, their favorite strategies. So some people's strategy is more, some people are more the desire type. So something difficult arises and we're challenged by, and so the best thing to do then is to ignore it by going into fantasy. Or you get lost in some nice desire fantasy for something. Or to not do anything about it except kind of start spinning out in imaginary worlds of desire around it. I'd like to do this, I'm going to do that, and planning, and it can be quite beautiful in the plans. So somehow you get swept into desire. That's the response. Some people have more of a tendency towards aversion, and so no matter what the challenge might be, they're critical of it, and they push it away, and they attack it, they blame. Sometimes the blaming, the attacking, the aversion can be towards the things, the world, the people around us who are challenging us. And sometimes it's to ourselves for our incapacity, our inability to respond to it, or our shortcoming. We blame ourselves. And so the world of aversion is a whole world that people get lost in, and it can be the primary kind of operating strategy in relationship to being challenged. And what we can learn through the meditation practice or through mindfulness is that it's possible to have a high-quality presence, attention and awareness to what's happening for a challenge or it's difficult for us, and be present for something with neither being swept into desire or swept into aversion, neither in a sense being for it or against it, neither moving towards it or pulling away from it, just kind of being present in a full way. And a different kind of, it's a different response because then it's not a reactive response, it's not a habitual response, and it's not the kind of response that colors our view of what the situation is. If we respond through desire, wanting it different or wanting a particular way, it's easier than to see things through the lens of what we desire. If we see it through the lens of our aversion, then we also be biased, not seeing it clearly for what it is. If we can learn not to see through the filter of desire or aversion, then we have a better chance to see clearly what the situation is, whether it's ourselves in our own meditation, whether it's our neighbor who's blaring their stereo at 11 o'clock at night, or whatever it might be. So then restlessness also can be a response to being challenged. It's kind of feeling challenged by something. Something's difficult, something happened we don't like, something is uncomfortable. And so we kind of run around in circles and kind of, you know, not quite, we get kind of aroused and preoccupied, and somehow the energy kind of level of arousal comes up, sometimes because of fear or being alarmed or something. Or sloth and torpor kicks in, like the kid. You become a six-year-old who's being asked to do something you don't like, or it's too challenging or too difficult. And so in that challenge, that difficulty of not feeling up to it, this is too much, you know, it's an uphill battle. And so then, you know, that we feel heavy and draining and tired. And that's a response, a psychological response, oh, I can't do it, you know, just kind of feel. And then there's doubt. And some people specialize in doubt as their primary response. I don't know what to do. I can't figure out what to do. Someone should tell me what I should do. And keep second guessing, well, I can't do that because that doesn't work. Maybe I'll try something else, but I can't do that. And which one should I do? And so kind of people are lost. So these things can happen in meditation practice in two ways. We can sit down to meditate, and the hindrances can arise in relationship to anything else that's going on in our life. So you can sit down to meditate, and you haven't had dinner yet, and so you sit doubting what you should have for dinner after the end of the meditation. You know, should I have pizza, spaghetti, calzone, or cheesecake? What should it be? You know, and you can't quite decide. The doubt is there. Or maybe there's no doubt at all. You know exactly what you want. Apparently, I just finished teaching a retreat, and I made some reference to, in my talks, to cheesecake. And I found out today that one of the retreatants who left, when she got home, all she could think about was she had to get cheesecake. So I'm sorry that I planted that in her mind. But you come here and you have some strong desire operating about something outside of here, and your mind goes off in that direction it goes. It's hard to get off that bandwagon. You try to get present, and the mind goes back into the fantasy. Or the hindrance of desire can be in relationship to meditation itself. So there can be some difficulty in meditation, or there can be some idealism in meditation, or there can be some wishful thinking in meditation about, you know, this meditation should be so wonderful. If only I could follow more breaths in a row, then I'm sure I'll be gliding and floating, and wouldn't that be nice to have a really deep, peaceful meditation, and that'll be great, and then I'll be able to teach, and then I'll be on, you know, Oprah, and I'll give wonderful talks, and wouldn't that be nice? And you know, if I could only follow a breath or two, you know. So it's the desire has to do about meditation. So same thing with aversion. It could be about something else out here. It's so strong, the aversion, that no matter how much you try to meditate and be present here, the mind keeps wandering off into the aversion. Or it could be about aversion towards something happening in the meditation, and a common one would be pain. Or it could be the wandering mind itself. My mind keeps wandering away, and then we have aversion towards that, and then we get caught up in thoughts, plans, ideas about relationship that are all based on aversion and ill will. So these things are really common, and I suspect that a good number of you specialize in one more than the other. And it might be interesting for you to look at your life, look at your common responses, and see which of these tends to be more predominant for you in your life. Some people have more desire type, some aversion type, some more doubt is really big. Doubt comes often with confusion. And some people are more sloth and torpor, some more restlessness is kind of like the predominant thing. So how is it for you? But they can also all operate at once. There's a wonderful term that was coined, I don't know, I think maybe it was Sylvia Boorstein, called a multiple hindrance attack. So they're all kind of like, when she described it, they're all operating all at once. And they can all operate in sequence too. Like you can have a strong desire, the desire gets frustrated, and so there's aversion or anger, And then in the aversion and anger, there might be such disappointment that our energy level drops. And I don't know how maybe restlessness might follow after that, but the end result would be doubt. Just like, oh, well, it's hopeless. I don't know what to do, and what should I do? And something. So these things can operate. And the tradition, the Buddhist tradition from the ancient times, holds up these five as one of the primary forces in the mind that prevents the mind from getting concentrated and prevents the mind from learning to be wise about what's happening in the present moment. So if you want to concentrate in the present moment, if you want to be here fully to be mindful and present, the tradition implies that you should really get a handle on these five hindrances. So there's two things to do to get a handle on them. One is to understand how they work for you, how they operate. Sometimes it's really hard to let go of things unless you understand them well. Sometimes when you listen to Buddhist teachings, it sounds like you're supposed to let go at the first opportunity you have. Just let go, let go, let go. Sometimes it's not wise to let go of things you don't understand yet. So to take your time and get to know it. So if it happens that you notice that you have strong desire, strong aversion, restlessness, tiredness, doubt, you might look and see what strategy, what your thoughts about that is. Do you have aversion to that? Are you reactive to that? And instead, try to be curious. Try to investigate and look at your experience of what it's like. And there's one of the primary things to look at is what it actually feels like. What's the subjective experience you're having? Because it doesn't help for the purposes of meditation practice to spend a lot of time analyzing, judging what this hindrance, the hindrance is there. It doesn't really help to take it as a personal failing to have a hindrance. What helps is to take these movement, these forces in the mind when they're operating as impersonal forces that all human beings have. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It just means that you're a person. But the task is to understand it really well. And understanding of it, learn how to be free of it. And to understand it by feeling and sensing and watching how it operates within us. So in terms of desire and aversion, most people have desire and aversion towards something. There's usually an object. And so the tendency when there's strong, these hindrances are strong, the mind is preoccupied with the thing that we want or the thing that we have aversion towards. We're thinking about thoughts. So we're focusing on the object. And when we do mindfulness, what we try to do is to turn the attention around 180 degrees, and instead of focusing on the object of what we're wanting or not wanting, we focus on what it feels like to be wanting, what it feels like to be aversive. So I could be holding the glass, and I could be thinking about how wonderful it would be to drink the glass, I'm thirsty, and I'd like to drink, and yes, my mouth will feel so good after I drink, and I'll give better talks, and all kinds of wonderful thoughts about the glass. Or I can focus on how I'm holding the glass. Maybe my hand's gripping it, or my eyes are fixated on it, or something. And so to turn around and look and see when you have strong desire, what does it feel like in your psychophysical being to be in the grip of desire, to have strong desire operating? What parts of your body are energized when you have desire? Is it the desire in your stomach or in your heart or in your head? Or is it a lot of thoughts spinning out and a lot of energy? Is there any tension anywhere in the system? It's very interesting to look at the world of desire because it's often a multi-layered world. So there might be very strong desire, there might be leaning forward, a lot of energy of wanting to act and to want. And if you begin hanging out with it and looking at it, sometimes with desire you can see there's layers underneath it. There might sometimes be some discomfort underneath the desire that's prompting the desire. So you know, the idea that some people, if you're lonely, some people go to the refrigerator because you know, somehow to kind of satisfy or kind of cover over the loneliness with food. Some people stuff themselves or go shopping. You know, that's a good one, right? Feeling depressed or sad or kind of off. And well, shopping's a great thing to do, right? You can go to Macy's and try on clothes. And makeup. What? Makeup? Makeup. I don't understand that one. So you don't feel good, so that's, apparently that's just makeup is a good strategy. And so then... So the idea is to turn around and actually feel. So underneath you might feel the loneliness or feel the sadness or the distress or something that's going on underneath that's prompting the desire. Then you, the same with the aversion. What does aversion feel like? Aversion, ill will, anger, resentment, probably feels a very different than desire. Usually desire feels good. There's usually a kind of a nice feeling, usually, with desire. Aversion usually feels lousy. Though some people like the energy of anger and feeling the vitality of it, and that's part of the hook that keeps people attached to their anger, is that vitality that they have. But usually kind of burning, heaviness, hardness, variety of sensations, what sensations, feelings, tension that can come with anger aversion. Sloth and torpor, restlessness, doubt, they all have their own characteristics, sensations and feelings in the body. The ways in which they manifest. And so if we can turn around 180 degrees and feel it in the body, then we're present for what is happening in the present moment. And that's the task of mindfulness, is to learn to be present for what is. If you're lost in the hindrance, then you're not present anymore because you're lost. You're involved in something else. But if you're present for your hindrance, if you're very mindful, you're completely mindful, you're looking it straight in the eye and say, I see you, desire, then you're not, then it no longer becomes a hindrance because it's not hindering your insight, not hindering your ability to see. So this is a very important thing about these five hindrances, is we don't have to get rid of them in order to become free. We have to be, our mindfulness has to be stronger than the hindrance so we see them clearly. And if we see them with enough clarity, you won't be caught in their orbit. You won't be stuck to them. And so and that's, at that point, they're no longer hindering you. Then desire becomes, it's not a hindrance of desire, it's just desire. If the aversion, if you're stronger than the aversion, then it's not the hindrance of aversion, it's just aversion. And it's possible to have anger and resentment bubble up the awareness is so strong that it's just there, and you don't buy into it, you're not reactive to it, and probably just kind of passes relatively fast that way. When we can identify a hindrance as a hindrance, really see, oh, that's my hindrance, that's a hindrance operating, and identify it strongly enough like that, that's also a very good time then to realize this is not a good time to make a decision. This is probably not very wise right now if I'm in the grip of these strong desire, strong hindrance. Sometimes you can get to have it and recognize you have a hindrance and still be pulled back into it. But if you have enough wisdom to know, oh, you know, this is not the time to make a decision. This is not the time to say something to the person I'm angry with or the person I'm desiring. I think this is the time to just kind of try to come back and be present and ground myself here in myself. So the five hindrances are common themes for mindfulness practice. It's useful, very useful to become familiar with them when they operate for you. I suspect that you don't have to wait very long for one of them to operate. And so then to stop and look at it. But it can be a little bit tricky to recognize a hindrance as a hindrance because sometimes the habit of reacting or responding to things with desire, aversion, these ways can seem so natural and seem so right that it doesn't occur to people to be mindful of it. So, for example, it could be that someone decides to come to IMC really late from one of our events, and we finished our meditation, and maybe I'm in the middle of giving my talk, and they go grab a free chair, and they lift it over everybody's heads, and they put it right down in front of here, in front of me, and the big chin, big person, and you know, most people can't see, and behind, and so You know, that's kind of unusual behavior, you know, coming late, and they made a lot of noise, and so it could be like, I'm going to write to the board of IMC and complain about people, how they sit here, and they have to fix something, and this is terrible, and this is wrong, this is injustice, and one more time, you know, this injustice is done to me, and this, you're indignant, and it just seems like, because, you know, you're a victim of this person's callousness of putting a chair right in front of you in the front of the hall and all that, and there's lots of space in the back for the chair, and it just seems like right to think those thoughts. It seems completely reasonable that you should be carried, swept away and think about these thoughts. And maybe it is. But it's unnecessary. And to be caught in those thoughts means you're not free. And so one of the options you have, if you practice mindfulness, is to, rather than blaming IMC for not taking care of these chairs and bolting them down so no one can move them, or wishing that you were 6 foot tall or 8 foot tall, just look above them, I don't know, it's whatever you wish. I wish you'd done that. you can turn around, again, the attention 180 degrees and look at yourself and feel and sense what's going on. Feel the energy of it, feel the sensations, feel the thoughts, feel the emotions. And then in that turning around and looking, to notice the glue, to notice the hooks, to notice the way you keep getting pulled into it and you want to think about it, you want to get involved, or how that works. Just feel and sense and be present. When the hindrances, when they're strong, it can be very helpful to very quietly, softly in the mind, name the hindrance. Just desire, aversion, restlessness, sloth, get to use the word, doubt. Sometimes there's something about naming what you're paying attention to that helps loosen up the stickiness to it. Helps acknowledgement helps us not be so identified with it. So that's one of the strategies to do. But so you want to look at it. So probably in the course of the day, there's a lot of opportunities to stop and look at it. And one of the things to look at and notice, what difference it makes for you if you are mindful of the hindrance rather than how you usually be with it. What is the difference between turning around and looking at it 180 degrees and breathing with it, sensing it, feeling it, relaxing with it, and letting it kind of float away or dissipate? After you've gotten to know it well, then if it's easy, maybe you can let go of it. But it's usually not, unless it's going to cause problems if you keep it going, it's usually best, as I said, not to let go right away, but to get to know it first, see it clearly for what it is. And then, you know, it's also then a little trick, because the point of mindfulness practice is to be mindful of what's happening in the present moment. And if something's making it hard for you to be present, and you make that the object of mindfulness, then you're in the present again, because that's happening in the present moment. Isn't that a nice trick? So whatever is the problem, whatever is the difficulty in meditation, make that the focus. And then you're in the present moment again, like that. And then we try to be present in a kind, relaxed way. So, I have a question for you, a survey for you to do. I don't know if you guys are game or willing to admit this. How many of you, of these five, there's five, right? So desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety, and doubt. How many of you mostly kind of can identify with one of them as being kind of like your ace or your more common tendency? The rest of you, multiple hindrance attacks? All of them, all the ones? Okay. So those of you who raised your hands, how many of you is desire the main one? Those of you, raise your hand, how many is aversion? How about sloth and torpor? Only a few people had the energy to raise their hands. And then restlessness? Not the same number, but different people. And then doubt. Great, thank you. You're not sure. Then I should ask, who's unsure what type they are? And so I don't think we have time, but I had this idea that I'd ask for 5 volunteers to make a panel up here, one of each type. And then we kind of find out, each of them, you know, their point of view of how they see the world and themselves. And I think we'd get 5 very different points of view of the same thing. Should we do that? Should we try it in the 10 minutes we have? Do we have 5 volunteers who are willing to? What type are you?
I'm the avoiding.
Aversion, avoidance?
Oh. Like desire.
Or desire, your desire, that's your thing.
I feel it's planning.
Desire, because, yeah, okay. And how about an aversive type? Anybody? In Buddhism, they say it's better to be aversive than to be desirous type. It's more dangerous because it can cause more harm, but it's more helpful for practice. Because because you have a strong saying, no, I'm not going to let my mind go, or I'm not going to do that. So anyway, for those of you who are shy about admitting your aversive type in public like this, it's a good sign in Buddhism. You're aversive type? Yeah? Okay. How about sloth and torpor? We didn't have many hands went up, but any of the sloth and torpor people willing to make the effort to come up here? No? How about the restlessness type? Yeah? And then what about the doubt? Yeah? Okay. So we have 4 out of the 5. That's good. So I'm not sure how we're going to do this. I haven't thought this out. But maybe we can get... Can we get 4 chairs up here and then you can come sit up here? Maybe help with it. People can maybe help with some extra chairs and... Should have the maybe we can begin by asking them. We don't have much time, so maybe like each of them, maybe. There's a few seconds, a minute or something or less. What's the primary way that your hindrance operates in meditation practice you've done? What does it look like in your meditation?
For me, it's desire. And I think that the reason I probably default to this one is just because it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. You know? Uh-huh. Brings pleasure.
I think for me the biggest hindrance is doubt, but doesn't have much problem in
meditation.
In meditation, yeah. It's probably sloth.
Sloth and torpor, yeah. In meditation. Okay. Oh, good. So we got one up. You've got two. We got.
I can do double.
Two for one here. And what does it look like in meditation? How's that experience for you in meditation?
If I'm tired, I kind of
fall over.
Falling.
Yep, I've done that.
And well, for me, it's at times just having that monkey mind. Mm. So going from thing to thing and then saying not now.
That helps.
And then saying not now again. And then saying...
I said avoidance. Mm-hmm. Not sure if that operates in my meditation as much as it operates in my life.
Daily life it operates, yeah.
Although probably doubt is more in my meditation, but I'm not really sure. Uh-huh. You know, whether I should sit with the Zen style of eyes slightly open or Uh-huh. All those kinds of questions of doubt. But in my life, it helped me when you said about the aversion, because I realized I'll read about something and get excited about something and think, well, I need to do something about that. I need to, that's terrible. I need to
fix it.
Do something. Uh-huh. I need to take some action. And it makes me avoid all the things I already, you know, it takes me out of my focus on my life.
So you get distracted easily by this desire to fix something and do something in the world.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, and then when you have a challenge, something uncomfortable happens to you in your life, something that feels very uncomfortable or challenging, does your favorite hindrance kind of operate in some, can you describe a little bit how it works? And hold it vertically, horizontally, so that you're...
What was the question?
Yeah, so if you're challenged or you're up against something very uncomfortable or difficulty, does your hindrance kind of rear its head? And how does it, what is your particular, what particular way does it rear its head? How does it show itself for you?
I either lose focus, as I said, yeah. Or for me it's doubt. I can't decide the right course of action.
Uh-huh. Great.
Well, now I'm wondering if I have restlessness or doubt. But under those circumstances, often I'll just go from option to option to option, trying to become more and more analytical about which is the right option, which is the wrong option, and in weighing, and then get lost in that in a very restless manner.
So the two go together. Very much so with you. Great, thank you.
It's usually when I'm making decisions. There's lots of decisions, and I get paralyzed, and I'd end up doing nothing. Mm. And I get more frustrated. And
so you freeze, paralyzed, and
yeah, freeze. The doubt freezes me from taking action.
So doubt freezes you. Great, thank you.
I think for me, when something challenging comes up, I go into gathering information and planning and deciding, okay, what's my next direction I'm going to go in so that I don't have to be in this anymore, because I feel like I can take action to get out of it.
I see. So, but it operates as a, it sounds like sometimes that's wise, but it operates as a hindrance when you are...
I think it's just not being present. It's like avoiding what's there and trying to get to the next thing that feels better or is easier.
Mm. Great. Does anyone have a question for our panelists?
A question? The blue shirt and the way in the back room.
I can't see. Oh, yes. Yeah, so I... No.
Am I just not? Oh yeah, I'm just not close enough to the mic. Okay, so yeah. Given what they all said, and given what you said about when you're in the grip of a hindrance, maybe it's not the best time to make a decision. That seems. I can't decide how I feel about that with doubt. Because in some ways I see that, like, maybe it's not the right time to make a decision. If it's like a big thing, then just sort of wait for
it. I think when there's doubt, you don't have a problem like that because you're not going to make a decision.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Okay, so I guess it's not that it's not wise to make a decision in that case since it's never going to happen.
Well, I've done that sometimes where I had doubt what to do, and finally I just, maybe it's because a little aversion kicks in, I don't know what to do, I'm doubtful, and so I finally just give up and flip a coin, or give up and just do the easy thing, or the first thing. Or
yeah, because I've actually found that, like, especially with little decisions, it's better just pick one, just to flip a coin, or, like, I don't know, sometimes I just use, is the time on my phone even or odd? That's my system, but yeah, okay. I don't know. Then yeah. I don't have to think about it anymore, so.
Okay, so... I guess it's time. Do we have any really good questions for our people?
Good questions.
Good questions. Yes, you have a question. Or
not a question, a little bit related. It was just happening this evening. I was in a situation discussing decisions.
Yeah.
And I decided I don't want to make the decision, and I'm better off 10 minutes to insight meditation. I'm going to go and come here.
We're the result of the hindrance today.
So, yeah.
Great.
So it's not making the decision, postponing it, yeah, with the intention of just sleeping on it.
Great, thank you. So maybe thank you for willing to come up here like this, and maybe we can have your names. Maybe you can say your names.
My name's Fadi.
Fadi. Mm-hmm.
Jennifer.
I'm Scott.
Laura.
Great. So thank you very much, and may you all learn about your hindrances, so not only you become free of your hindrances, but the world becomes free of your hindrances.